Although her plea was to French members of parliament, it was also a plea to the American journalistic community, which has apparently turned a deaf ear. As has also, come to think of it, the U.S. government. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And it's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall.
Your mom put handcuffs on.
This is the moment a 5-year-old girl was handcuffed by police officers before being taken into custody. The child attends a kindergarten class at a school in St. Petersburg in Florida. Earlier, teachers were unable to calm the pupil down after she threw a violent tantrum.
This is the sound of a 5-year-old throwing a violent tantrum and police getting involved. Oh, yes, America. You gotta love it. Oh, my God. Just when you think it can't get any stranger, something like this comes along. Yeah, let's take a look at the way the BBC reported it, because I think that's probably going to be the most detached view we can get. A lawyer has threatened to sue police officers who handcuffed an allegedly uncontrollable 5-year-old girl after she acted up at a Florida kindergarten. The officers were called by the school after a teacher and assistant principal failed to calm down the little girl. Now, the video... Yes, there's video. I don't know why there's video, but there is. There's video of the whole thing happening. And I see a 5-year-old throwing a tantrum. It doesn't look any worse. I mean, she doesn't have any weapons, which I guess is kind of surprising. But, you know, it's a 5-year-old. You can deal with 5-year-olds. Yeah, she's running around and yelling a little bit. But the school called the cops? I mean, these people should not be running a school because they're crazy. They obviously have no conception of how to raise kids, how to teach kids, how to handle kids. And don't even get me started on the cops. What kind of cop would, in any situation, handcuff a 5-year-old? First of all, how can you handcuff a 5-year-old? Won't their hands just slip right out of the cuffs? I don't know. I don't know how you can live with yourself doing something like that. It's probably trauma for life, that kind of a thing. The incident was caught on a video camera, which... here's another great part of this story. It was rolling in the classroom as part of a self-improvement exercise at the St. Petersburg School. Well, gosh, I guess it's a lot to focus upon now, and that's a self-improvement exercise. What could we have done better? Well, just about everything. Except maybe the camera work. That was pretty good. Having the camera there, that... good idea, but everything else, stupid. A lawyer for the girl's mother said the episode was incomprehensible. The video made public by the lawyer shows the unfolding of the violent tantrum. I wouldn't even call it a violent tantrum. You know? Nobody got hurt. At least none of the adults got hurt. It started when the little girl refused to take part in a math lesson. That's how it begins. Refused to take part in a math lesson at age 5, and next thing you know, you're in the back of a patrol car heading to the slammer. Actually, I don't think it actually reached that point, but how far away are we from that? The little girl then ripped some papers off a bulletin board. Yeah, I saw that. Boy, that was shocking. Ripped some papers off a bulletin board. You know... It's a good thing there's no video of me when I was 5. I'll bet the statute of limitations hasn't run out on some of the things I was up to. Then she lashed out at staff, trying to calm her down. After calling her mother and learning she would not be able to pick up the child for at least one more hour, the teachers resorted to calling the police. My God, they never had to deal with a kid throwing a tantrum before. They're unable to deal with 5-year-olds. My God, I mean, it's... I feel like I'm reading fiction here. Every week I feel like I'm reading fiction. But it's starting to get really kind of strange. 3 officers rushed to the scene and handcuffed the girl, by that time apparently calm, after pinning her arms behind her back. Why in God's name did they handcuff her if she was calm in the first place? Even if you think handcuffing a temper tantrum-throwing 5-year-old is appropriate... She's not throwing a temper tantrum. What is the point of handcuffing her, even in your warped mind? The footage showed her in distress after being handcuffed. They finally drove her to her mother in the back of a police cruiser. Okay, so you know what I would do? I basically would close down that school, fire everybody, fire all cops who took part in that, and fire anybody who in any way... is in charge of children, thinking that handcuffing them is the answer. It's just insane. And, unfortunately, it's indicative of things that are happening in this country. You know, if there's any kind of a problem whatsoever, you resort to force. You resort to police and handcuffs and guns drawn. I wonder if they drew their guns. Didn't see that, but... That's next as well. Yeah, it may be something to laugh at for some people, but I can only imagine the trauma that when you're 5 years old going through something like that. I hope somebody's head rolls. I really do. Right here at home, very locally, maybe about 5 miles away from here at most, we had yet another incident involving police where a Ronkonkoma man died on Friday after encountering police. They shot him 5 times with a taser gun. Now, of course, you know, the police department here is jumping to the defense of the cops, saying they used commendable restraint. The guy's dead. What kind of commendable restraint did they use exactly? You know, it's completely insane. We had a person here. This guy was not 5 years old. This guy was, what was he? I don't know. He was 240 pounds. He was 5'9". And, apparently he was having some kind of a panic attack. He had cocaine in his system, alcohol in his system. Turns out he had a heart condition on top of everything else. He was supposed to be taking medication, had forgotten to take medication. So, yeah, this is not a five-year-old throwing a tantrum. This is a full-grown man who could really have hurt somebody. No question about that. But, oh, and he was black, too, so I guess, you know, that adds to the panic level of the police, especially out here. And the little girl is black, too, by the way. I don't know if that played into it, but it might have. It's ridiculous, I know. For those of you listening in other countries, you may think I'm kidding, but I'm not. That's how messed up things are here. So, yeah, you had all those things going through the cops' minds. But these are cops, you know? These are policemen. These are people who are trained in dealing with people who are unreasonable. So I cannot accept, under any circumstance, how an unarmed man can be murdered by police in order to, I guess, restrain him in some way. And then be called commendable for your actions. Sorry, that just doesn't work for me. You know, these are cops that should be trained in how to deal with this. They should be able to go into a situation with somebody who even is holding a weapon and calm that person down and get them to put down their weapon. But there was no weapon involved here, was there? No, I don't see any reference to that. Let's see what actually transpired. The incident erupted on Friday after John Cox, 39 years old, came to visit his girlfriend and started drinking with friends at the house. Now, he'd been taking antipsychotic medication, but apparently hadn't on that particular occasion. He suddenly became agitated, prompting an acquaintance inside the house to call 911. I guess a lesson here to learn is don't ever call 911 unless you want somebody to die. Because that seems to happen all too often when you call those idiots who don't know how to deal with situations like this. And I'm sorry if I sound angry, but this kind of thing just pisses me off so much to see it happen over and over again. We called the police because Johnny forgot to take his medication and started yelling and screaming. That, according to a friend of his, whose name I can't find. First, Daryl Harris, that's it, Daryl Harris. A Brentwood resident whose grandmother lives in the house. He punched a hole through a bedroom door and was telling us he was God. When officers arrived just after 8 p.m., they cleared several of the occupants out of the house and confronted Cox in a bedroom. The sergeant shows up, says, "I have a taser, calm down, get on your knees," at which point he charges them. Now, that's according to Suffolk Homicide Commander Detective Lieutenant Jack Fitzpatrick. The sergeant fired the taser, sending 2 electrically charged darts from the taser at Cox, striking him on his bare chest. Cox pulled the darts out and kept coming. Over the next 10 minutes, Fitzpatrick said, the nine officers, my God, wrestled with Cox, trying to subdue and handcuff him. What I don't understand is, how come 9 cops can't subdue 1 person? Yeah, okay, he's 240 pounds. Why don't they get a 240-pound cop? You know, why don't they get some muscle man who works for the police who can subdue people like this? This is a guy who didn't have any weapons on him, just was charging and was out of his mind. Anyway, during that time, he bit an officer on the left shoulder, broke another officer's wrist, and was shocked with tasers 4 more times. You know what you could do? I mean, I'm not a cop, I'm not an expert in this, but apparently neither are they. You close the door. You leave the room, you leave him in the room, you close the door, let him go nuts a little bit. Calm him down. You know? Instead, there has to be this mentality where you must obey me. If you don't obey me, I'm going to shoot you with something. When Cox was placed face down on a gurney and handcuffed in front of his stomach, he still resisted so much that 3 officers had to accompany him in the ambulance to Brookhaven Memorial Hospital in East Patchogue. Margie Jackson of Bayshore said she saw him leave the house, but she refutes the police account. He wasn't moving, she said. Once at the hospital, medical personnel attempted to place him on another gurney and noticed Cox did not appear to be breathing. And that got their attention. He was pronounced dead at 9:37 p.m. Cox had no broken bones or skull fractures, only a few abrasions. Police did not strike Cox or use pepper spray and exercised restraint in trying to subdue them. That's subdue him, according to the police. But several witnesses who were just outside the house said they heard police beating Cox moments after they arrived. 9 cops were stomping on his head, kicking him in the groin area, while 1 put a taser to his chest. This according to a witness who said she stepped on a chair and peered through a bedroom window. They were in the house with him for an hour, said Lucille Harris, an elderly woman who rents the tiny house. The cops put us outside and shut the blinds. Unbelievable. And you notice something else? We don't know who they are. They're protected. We don't find out their names. How sick is that? Now, you know, if I had accidentally killed 9 cops, or, you know, if 9 of my friends had accidentally killed 1 cop, do you think we could be protected like that? Of course not. And I'm sure there are plenty of instances where, yeah, it's an accident, but you'd never get away with an accident. And how many times have we seen in the past where it wasn't an accident on the part of police, where they're filmed doing something horrible, or where the evidence is just so incredibly outrageous, shooting people in their own doorways for holding a wallet, or various other abuses. And they're protected. Their identities are kept confidential, and usually they get away with it. It's just sad, it's ridiculous, and I don't know what the solution is. But getting rid of those guys, that's a start. Finding out who they are, that's a start. Because obviously they are not trained to deal with situations like this. And yeah, I know things can get pretty hairy out there, but that's the job you signed up for. And tasers can be deadly, especially if somebody has a heart attack, which a lot of people do. Of course you didn't know that. But it's one of the basic risks that happen when you use things like that. You could stab somebody and find out later they're a hemophiliac. Oh, you didn't know. Come on. And then we have all the parallels that are going on in the world, and there were a bunch of them this week. The top-ranking officers completely cleared in the Abu Ghraib probe. You know, the prison where U.S. Soldiers and contractors were torturing Iraqi prisoners. Well, the Army has found that 4 top Army officers in Iraq were completely exonerated. They were cleared of any wrongdoing. According to the Legal Counsel for Human Rights Watch, this just proves that the Army cannot investigate itself. And why should they be investigating themselves? Does that make any sense? If the U.S. is going to wipe away the stain of Abu Ghraib, there has to be some independent investigation that looks at the responsibility of all those people who ordered or who tolerated torture, no matter where they are in the chain of command. And, you know, it's very easy to say, well, this guy had no knowledge of it. Of course, when you're in a military situation, there's such a thing as chain of command. You're supposed to know about these things. You're supposed to be responsible for everything that goes on underneath you. And apparently that doesn't hold true here. And since there's no directly obvious evidence, such as a videotape of somebody saying, yeah, go torture those people, or perhaps standing next to one of the torturers with a thumbs-up signal. Without that, okay, you know what? We don't have the smoking gun. But it seems to me there's enough there to show that this was closer to policy than a few rogue people going around having fun. The Washington Post, citing government officials familiar with the findings, reported on Saturday that the only officer who will face discipline is Brigadier General Janice Kopinski. She was commander of the 800th Military Police Brigade, which included the soldiers who have so far been convicted in connection with abuses at the prison. The newspaper said she will receive an administrative reprimand for dereliction of duty, one that could end her military career. It continues to seem that she has been singled out or targeted for responsibility for Abu Ghraib, said her military criminal defense lawyer. She feels like it's a shared responsibility. She accepts her part of the responsibility, but it's a shared responsibility throughout the chain of command, not just her. And the very fact that she would be saying this is something worthy of attention. Maybe she's completely lying, I don't know, but she's also in the military. And if she says other people were aware of this, I think that counts for something. And it deserves an investigation, not just by the people who are being investigated. I mean, it's just so absurd. Receiving no punishment, our Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who at the time was commander of U.S. forces in Iraq, Major General Walter Wojciechowski, Sanchez's former intelligence chief in Baghdad, Major General Barbara Fast, and Sanchez's top legal advisor at the time, Colonel Mark Warren. And Army officials are defending the investigation in response to public expectations about senior leader punishment, even before findings have remained public. We are doing what our citizens expect us to do for any citizen, protecting their rights while ensuring we find and act appropriately on the truth. We will not rush to judgment in these cases or in any others. And wherever possible, we will not find any judgment against any of these people. Pathetic. And then we have the most recent example of what's, I guess, a theme lately. And that's the complete clearing of military personnel in the killing of the Italian security guard who was escorting a just-released hostage. You might recall this. They were driving away and were fired upon by U.S. troops who claimed that they did not stop for a checkpoint. A story that, when you look at it, makes no sense. It really makes no sense at all. Here are people that are allies, you know, Italian representatives, a security person. Why would they try to run a U.S. checkpoint? Does that make any sense at all? You know, these are people that know what a checkpoint is. They know they're in Iraq. They know things are dangerous. They just secured the release of a hostage. Yeah, let's try and see if we can outrun the Americans now. Makes no sense at all. But it was accepted by, again, the investigators investigating themselves. An Italian journalist, the Italian journalist, that is, who was held prisoner, criticized the U.S. military report, which just came out yesterday, or was actually leaked. Criticized the U.S. military report into the killing of the agent who helped secure her release. Secret agent, yes, secret agent, Nicola Calipari was shot by U.S. forces as he escorted Giuliana Sigrina to Baghdad's airport. U.S. investigators were reported to have found the troops not culpable in a report which Italy has not endorsed. This could be a real problem between the United States and Italy, And it could be the death knell for Berlusconi, who's trying to form a new government over there. Berlusconi refused to comment because he said the inquiry was not complete. He apologized to the Italian parliament for what he called an unfortunate leak, suggesting that the investigation was completed. He said contacts were continuing with U.S. officials to try to reach agreement on what happened. Mr. Greena described the conclusion of the leaked report as a slap in the face. And the security agent, Mr. Calabari, was hailed as a national hero after he was shot while trying to protect Ms. Segrina from gunfire. Rome and Washington have differed over what led to the incident in March. A U.S. Army official said on Monday that they still disagree over the speed at which the vehicle approached the checkpoint where the shooting occurred and how much communication there was between those in the car and the checkpoint guards. The U.S. military said the car carrying Mr. Calipari was speeding as it approached the temporary checkpoint in western Baghdad. They said the soldiers used hand and arm signals, flashing white lights, and firing warning shots to get the driver to stop. However, Ms. Segrina, who was hurt in the incident, said the car had not been speeding and that there had been no warning before the troops opened fire. Well, again, we may never know the truth. But it sure doesn't help when there's no independent investigation. And last good news out of Iraq, that weapons inspectors have officially ended their search for weapons of mass destruction. The search has been exhausted. There's no evidence also that weapons were smuggled to Syria. And boy, you know, this is what the opponents to the war were saying from the very beginning. The weapons of mass destruction were the number one reason why the United States went in there. And what do you think about that? If you knew now what you knew then, would you have supported what happened? Oh yeah, we have to support it now because it's going on. You know? But don't you feel just a little bit upset that you were lied to? And it was a lie. The evidence at that point was just as murky as what we're reporting on now. The scenario just as bizarre. And it was obvious where we were going. It was obvious where the United States was going on this, that we wanted a war. We wanted to invade the country. Didn't matter. Didn't matter what the evidence showed. You can tell. You can tell when somebody is pushing for a fight. And it seemed pretty obvious 2 years ago. But meanwhile, in other countries, it's a bit more interesting. Follow what's been happening in Ecuador. President Lucio Gutierrez has arrived in the Brazilian capital after fleeing his own country. Yeah, I saw this unfold last week. It was really kind of interesting. The ex-president was fired by Congress for allegedly being an absentee president. And here's the fun thing about this. He was fired, and then he was offered asylum by Brazil. And then demonstrators surrounded the place where he was and refused to let him leave because they wanted to put him on trial. Now, he eventually escaped. He went out a back gate or something, evading the protesters. But, you know, this is a guy that is accused of corruption, is accused of not doing his job, probably some other things too. Don't know if there's any violent suppression of people or anything like that. But things that, you know, pale in comparison to some of the crimes that you see presidents committing in various parts of the world, you know, torture and people disappearing, things like that. But the people were so riled up that they not only got him to be sacked, but they wanted to put him on trial. They did not want him to get away with this. Can you imagine if we were able to sum that kind of fury up against Bush, what that would be like? Surrounding the White House, refusing to let him escape, putting him on trial for all the things he's done? Of course, we'll never do that, because we're so complacent here in this country. As long as we have our television, as long as we have our fast food, our SUVs, you know, why should we challenge any of that? We're comfortable. Yeah, we're fat and we're dying, but we're comfortable. You know, we're fooling ourselves. We don't see the misery that's being caused. Well, some of us do. Families of the maybe 10,000 or so troops who have been maimed or killed for being sent off to a war that's a complete lie and a complete waste of time, they might be a little angry. People in other countries certainly are very angry. Hundreds of thousands of people are probably dead because of the actions of our president. So, yeah, you know, I think surrounding the White House and refusing to let him escape is a valid course of action. But we'll never do that because of our complacency. And even if we could agree on it, the left is just so completely messed up in this country that we'd start fighting with each other and probably string each other up before we got to anybody else. So, it's don't look for the situation to change anytime soon. But it doesn't mean you can't dream. Meanwhile, in Venezuela, President Hugo Chavez said on Sunday that a woman linked to the U.S. military has been arrested while photographing a military installation, and several U.S. citizens were also arrested for taking pictures of a refinery. He said these are signs that Washington may be plotting an invasion of his country. Now, I'm liking this guy more and more every day. You remember this? They tried to oust him a couple of years ago. In fact, it was a U.S.-backed, pretty certain, not 100% certain, but most people seem to believe this, and the evidence sure points to it, that the United States was behind a short-lived coup to get Chavez out of power. Chavez is widely supported by the poor people in his country and widely opposed by the rich people. And they tried without success to get him to resign, and it just didn't work. So this guy basically is setting himself up, unfortunately, to be the next Manuel Noriega that the United States will probably kidnap and house someplace. You never know. You never know what's going to happen next. Chavez said Sunday the military program was canceled because U.S. officers in Venezuela were spreading a negative image of his government to the soldiers they were training and were sent here to turn our boys against us. It's best that they leave until someday we can have transparent, clear relations and cooperation with the civil and military institutions of the United States, the way we do with almost all governments in the planet. Well, and he's also friends with Castro, too. So, yeah, he's dead. He's dead. The United States is totally going to plow over his country and invade and put in a government friendly to the rich and just do a whole Santiago thing all over again. But it is interesting to watch it unfold. And it's good to see somebody with guts stand up and say enough of this already. And meanwhile, back home, more good news. The U.S. Prison population is at an all-time high. We're at, last count, 2,131,180. And that was in the middle of last year, so it's probably gone up since then. And that was a 2.3% rise over the year 2003. Now, get this. The United States has incarcerated 726 people per 100,000 of its population. For every 100,000 people, 726 of them are in prison. That's almost 1 in 100, isn't it? Pretty high. 726. Now, compare that to other countries. Most democracies, that's 7 to 10 times as many. Not the number of people, the ratio, 7 to 10 times as many per 100,000. So an example, England is 142 per 100,000. France is 91, Japan is 58, we're 726. Amazing. Reminds me of the gun figures, you know. Not to bring all that up again, but interesting parallel. And it gets worse. 12.6% of black males in their late 20s were behind bars. That's 12.6%. That's more than 1 in 10. How crazy is that? Now, whites, in comparison, 1.7%. 1.7% to 12.6%. It's amazing. And violent crime has fallen by over 33% from 1994 to 2003. Property crimes have fallen by 23%, but the prison population is continuing to soar. Unbelievable. All right, well, as always, we enjoy hearing from our listeners. Again, we're still temporarily unable to take phone calls, but we are working on fixing that. And a good part of fixing that comes from hopefully using our matching fund to get a delay machine for the station. But the matching fund is contingent on people paying their pledges. So if you pledged a couple of weeks ago and you have not paid yet, please do so, because at that point, that's when we can see how much the matching fund actually is, and should have enough for a nice FM quality delay system where we can take phone calls for the entire hour, if necessary. Let's take a look at a couple of pieces of mail. Oh yes, this person wrote in wanting to know what this was. I just listened to your podcast about the Pope. Podcast. I love it. I found the music you were playing very relaxing and humorous. It changed me right out of a bad mood. Can you tell me what it was? Signed, Sean. Well, Sean, yes, I can. This is called Blessed Easter. And it comes from a guy named Holger Chizuki, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. Last name spelled C-Z-U-K-A-Y. First name H-O-L-G-E-R. And he's a former member of the German band Can, C-A-N. And this is from an album called Rome Remains Rome, and excerpts from Der Osten ist Rot. Which, if you translate it, means the East is red. It just seems so appropriate to play with all the Pope news recently. But that was then, and this is now, and it's not as appropriate anymore. Yeah, the new Pope is installed. He was successfully installed, no errors. And we look forward to a reign of Pope Benedict XVI, and that should be historic. But more important history, I was looking in the paper the other day and noticing that George Steinbrenner is getting really angry at the Yankees for losing. I love it. I love it when rich, fat idiots get upset because their money isn't working for them. And that's really what it's all about, you know. Looking at, you know, the Yankees have finished in first place 7 years in a row. That gets me angry for some reason. It just does. I don't know why. I was very happy when the Red Sox won because they were the underdogs. They have some real spirit behind them and not nearly as much money. And It just seems like the Yankees try to buy it every time. The last time the Yankees finished in last place, I was looking at this, because they're in last place right now. They're actually tied for last place, which is kind of cool. But the last time they actually finished in last place was 1990, which actually is a lot more recent than I thought it would be. They finished with a record of 67-95. That's a winning percentage of .414. Okay, now the time before that, when they finished in last place, that was 1966. They had a record of 70-89, a winning percentage of .440. And you know what? That's it. Those are the only two times in the history of the Yankees that they finished in last place. Now, yeah, there were a couple of times before that, when they were known as the New York Highlanders, and they really sucked then. In 1912, they finished 50-102. And in 1908, they finished 51-103. So that was really awful. So the worst winning percentage that they have ever had as the Yankees was, I guess, back in 1990, .414. So my goal this year is to do everything I can to see that they beat that record. You know, they're in last place now. Let's see if we can keep that up. Let's shoot for .300 winning percentage, you know? Like those good old Highlander days. You know, a little variety. When they win every year, when they finish in first place every year, that's not fun. It's boring. Let's see a catastrophe. Let's see them lose so many games that Steinbrenner has a complete conniption, fires everybody, maybe even himself somehow, and everybody is just thrown into turmoil. It's the same reason I wish for the stock market to do all kinds of crazy things. Variety, it's a spice of life. Oh, and a little bit of trivia. Do you know who, I mentioned the Yankees were known as the Highlanders. Do you know who they were known as before the Highlanders? It's too bad this isn't a call-in show, because I'd sure like to test people's knowledge. Of course, these days it's very difficult to do that, because everybody just goes onto the internet and finds an answer right away. So there's no challenge anymore. You have to sort of get people in a room and get answers from them when they're not connected to anything. But they were known as the Baltimore Orioles in 1901 and 1902. Bet you didn't know that. Different Baltimore Orioles. They were later reborn. Okay, so that's my sports quota for the year. FCC battle, that is moving along. A lot of people have been writing in with ideas and support, and we appreciate it all. Interesting bit of news that came out of D.C. this week. And I think it's an encouraging bit of news. I think it's something that has not gotten enough attention. Obviously, we need to do that. We need to focus on when good things happen as well as bad things. The FCC has denied complaints alleging that various ABC licensees aired indecent and profane material during a presentation of the film Saving Private Ryan. The agency received complaints about graphic violence and foul language in the war film, no doubt from those loonies at Parents Television Council. Some TV stations decided not to air the film for fear of running afoul of indecency rules. But in its decision, the agency said the language used in the movie was not indecent nor profane. That's right. The agency has decided that similar material depicting an historical view of World War II and wartime atrocities is not offensive nor indecent. While some complaints reference the violence depicted in the film, indecency and profanity prohibitions... Okay, I messed that sentence up, and I'm just going to pretend it didn't happen, and I'm going to start again. While some complaints reference the violence depicted in the film, indecency and profanity prohibitions are not applicable to violent programming, said the commission. Then FCC Chairman Michael Powell stated in the decision, "The horror of war and the enormous personal sacrifice it draws on cannot be painted in airy pastels. the true colors are muddy brown and fire red, and any accurate depiction of this significant historical tale could not be told properly without bringing that sense to the screen. My God! That's the FCC saying this. They're saying there are certain circumstances where profanity is appropriate. On the airwaves. You cannot portray the horrors of war without showing this. You can't do it accurately. I feel like I'm in a dream here. That's exactly the point that so many have been trying to make for so long. But not just war. Art forms of all sorts, documentaries, so many different things that have been curtailed or silenced or abridged in one way or another because this kind of clear statement was not made. Powell continued to say that fair warning is an important consideration in such cases, stating that frequently when it receives complaints, the public is fed up with being ambushed with content when they least expect it. Fair enough. Warnings are appropriate. Canadian television does that. If you turn on Canadian television and see something on the order of even South Park, or certainly Saving Private Ryan, which they would show uncut, every commercial break ends with a warning that this may contain material you might find objectionable. And people are okay with that. So maybe we can get over the lunacy and stop painting things in airy pastels. Warn the people who might be overly sensitive to this kind of thing so that they don't get offended. And then stop with the creative curtailment. Nobody wants a smut fest. Nobody wants profanity-laced broadcasts. But nobody wants to be controlled in such a way that any creativity goes down the drain. So I see this as a very hopeful sign, and it was a very buried story. I found this in Radio World. Didn't see much in the way of publicity in other places. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come, but we need to keep the pressure on. And the fight is not over. The fight has not stopped. We're going to continue looking into this and seeing what we can do. A couple more bits of mail on that subject. Dear Emmanuel, I support the need for change in this country regarding the FCC. Freedom of speech and the freedom of the press are the most important rights we have in this world/country. Even if we had no other rights, having a voice means the possibility for change. Pirate radio is on the rise as a direct result of the stranglehold the FCC is tightening on the broadcasting system. For example, had the FCC not suddenly changed the rules for low-power broadcasting to almost impossible requirements, Boulder Free Radio in Colorado would never have started as a pirate station anyway, as they're originally supposed to have a low-power FM license. You might as well be trying to run a high-power station now for all the difficulty they've caused. The freedom of speech is the freedom to express disdain for the government or parties thereof, and also the freedom to express your opinion in whatever words you choose. As Voltaire said, I may disagree with what you say, but I shall fight to the death for your right to say it. I have strong disdain for racism, however. If there were a racist radio/television, etc. show, I would only change the channel, as it is their right to show their opinion. Perhaps I would call into the show and share my opinion about their beliefs. However, this is not the FCC's responsibility to regulate, in my opinion. Short and sweet, things need to change. I want to help. You have my support. Sincerely, Useless. Well, except for your name, I agree with everything you have to say. At racist things, it's difficult. I'm torn on that one. Obviously, you see something that just gets you so upset and is demeaning to people. You want to do something about it, but maybe you can do something about it without calling in the FCC. I don't know. I'd like some more input on that. Here's a bit of mail from Brazil. This is your loyal Brazilian listener, Francisco. Sorry for not sending this email last week. I guess I was kind of stoned and just too amused by the Pope jokes to understand what the email should be about. And yes, I want to help with the FCC issue in any way I can. Of course, the 5,000 miles that separates me from WUSB, or the FCC for that matter, will have to be considered. Well, your words certainly do matter. Maybe you can't stand on a picket line or sign a petition, not being a U.S. citizen, but you certainly can inspire us. Dear Emmanuel, I enjoy both Off the Wall and Off the Hook via the Internet. Please include me in the battle against the expanding censorship imposed by the FCC. Let's ensure that they remain within the charter that created them and nothing more. Signed, Ray. Thanks very much for your input there. Let's see what else we have here. Dear Emmanuel, I hope you will open your blind eyes to the reality of the world and stop saying such mean and unnice things about the FCC. If it wasn't for the FCC, every TV station would air nothing but pornography so increasingly foul that no one would watch it. You seem to naively think that just because no one would watch, they would stop showing it. But TV stations, except for Fox News, the only station that is fair and balanced, are liberally based, or biased rather, and would therefore do nothing but broadcast unfiltered pornography with themes of gay marriage and pro-choice rallies and video game caliber violence. You talk about freedom. If you think you aren't free, go to France. If you know anything about freedom, you'd know that in order to protect our freedom, we can't go undermining our troops who protect our right to have an FCC. Did you know Iraq didn't have an FCC? That's why people like Saddam Hussein come into power. I don't know about you, but I don't want Saddam running the U.S. of A. Signed, Emoticon and Rusty McRightwing. And, you know, I guess when people just spell out their position in such clear terms, it's kind of hard not to see the logic in it. And I'm writing, this is another letter, I'm writing to add myself to the list you have started regarding the FCC. I fully agree with the comments you made on your show on both the March 29th and April 5th shows. If something we see on a certain channel offends us, just change the channel. Don't try and get it banned. I kind of took this theory to the extreme a few months ago. I have an 11-month-old son whom I noticed would sit in front of the television and stare at it. That was when I noticed how the images are constantly changing. Nothing stays the same for more than a second or two. Must be watching MTV. I thought to myself, this can't be good for him, so I took it down and put it in my closet. Lo and behold, and to my surprise, I rather liked not having a television. So I ended up selling it. Now I have no TV in my house at all. I can still watch movies on my computer, so if I need a fix, that's not a problem. It is incredibly refreshing not to be bombarded by advertisements all the time. Without watching all those mind-numbing commercials, I feel I have become more focused in most of my daily activities. Not sure if the two of these are related, but it's just something to think about. Not to mention all the good books I've been able to finally read. Thanks for all your time and all your hard work. Love the shows and magazine. And I'm signing the list as well. Signed, Dan. Thanks very much, Dan, for that information. And, you know, TV, most of the time you should keep it off, but there are interesting things that are worth seeing and worth investing some time in, obviously, as with any medium. But even if there weren't, you have to pay attention to it. Otherwise, it falls into the hands of people who simply want to control whatever media outlet they can. And let's see. Time for one or two more. I want to tell you, I totally support you in your fight for free speech, and in particular against the FCC. Here in Canada, we have the CRTC, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, which is basically the same thing. In Montreal and Quebec City, there is starting to be more and more trash radio shows, which I personally dislike. But still, it should be up to the people to decide what they want to hear, not some government commission. Signed, Kareem. Thank you very much for that bit of mail. And dear Off the Wall, thank you for all your work. I just pledged $100 to support you and WUSB. I'm not lucky enough to hear you over broadcast, but I am lucky enough to hear you on the Internet. I live in a small mountain town in Idaho. I wanted to know how you feel about pirate radio. I understand you are lucky enough to have access to a radio station like WUSB, but where I live, every radio station but NPR is owned by one company. I've put large amounts of research into pirate radio, but have never gotten the nerve to go forward with it. What do you think? I understand there is LPFM, but they aren't accepting applications right now, so I find myself in a bind deciding which direction to go. Signed, Charles. Well, Charles, you know, you live in a mountain town in Idaho. It's hard to believe that every frequency is taken. And I also can't understand why they're not accepting LPFM applications, since it's obvious not every frequency is taken. So I would say do what you have to do. These airwaves are public airwaves. Just make sure you don't step on somebody else. And undoubtedly, somebody will complain. You have to wonder why. And when they track you down, you probably just get a warning. Can't guarantee it, though. But you have to ask yourself, what exactly is the problem that you're causing? Why is it necessary to come after you? Might be interesting to ask those questions when they do that. Which undoubtedly they will. But still, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling to speak out against depression in whatever form. But if you do, make sure you do it intelligently. And without interfering with existing stations. And finally, dear Emmanuel, I just heard that you were matching contributions after I had already pledged. Whoops. Oh, this is the guy who pledged $500. Not that I would have changed my level of support for WUSB, but I'm still sorry I stabbed you in the heart. Signed, Adam. Well, Adam, you didn't stab me in the heart. In fact, you gave me a really glowing, warm sensation there as the blood flowed outward. But no, it's great. It's a sacrifice on our behalf, having to match the amount, but it also feels great knowing that we can, and knowing that we will, and knowing the place will become stronger as a result of that. So thanks to you, thanks to all the people who pledged support, and thanks to those of you who listen and write in and say inspiring things and keep us going, because you're the reason we do this. We'll be back again next week. Oh, next week's going to be an interesting program. I'm not actually going to be here in the studio. We're going to be testing out the equipment that we'll be using for the Round the World voyage later this year. So I'm going to be somewhere. I'm going to record the show from someplace. Maybe people can suggest interesting sounding locations. Basically walking around with a microphone and a little MP3 player, recording the program that way. And then burning it to CD and playing it here next week. So if that works, then we know we can do it over the summer, and we'll be able to really have a lot of fun. Write to us, otw@2600.com. This is Off the Wall, heard every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 on WUSB, every Saturday night from 10 to 11 on WBCQ shortwave. If you have a station that you'd like to play Off the Wall on, write to us, otw@2600.com. See you next week.
Hi, this is Alvin Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.